Lillian Vasquez, and this is Inland Edition. As we approach the two-week mark since the end of the holiday season, much of California is still locked down. We learned last night that Governor Gavin Newsom announced that the greater Sacramento area and some other Northern California communities are no longer under stay-at-home orders. This is not the case here in Southern California, and that means the pandemic will continue to affect the way businesses are allowed to operate. Today on Inland Edition, I'll talk with Ryan Hagan, a reporter with Southern California News Group. The news group publishes several regional newspapers, including The Sun, Inland Valley Daily Bulletin, The Press Enterprise, and the Redlands Daily Facts. Ryan will share information about restaurants and the requirements connected to stay-at-home orders. We'll begin our first Inland Edition episode in 2021 with information on the coronavirus vaccines and their distribution. To get the latest information, we've invited Michael Osier back to the show. He is the Assistant Director for Riverside County Public Health and is one of the key people working on the coordination of the COVID-19 vaccine distribution in Riverside County. Michael, welcome back to Inland Edition.
Hi, Lillian. It's great to be back.
Well, vaccines are on most people's mind. Let's talk a little bit about it and how it's being handled in Riverside County. First of all, who's getting the vaccine now, and what have been some of the logistic challenges for you?
Right now, we call it Phase 1A, Tiers 1 through 3. Basically, healthcare workers, skilled nursing facilities, people that deal with patients and clients face-to-face, even in-home support services workers, social workers, people that deal with clients every day. We're trying to get the people at highest risk to get vaccinated first.
And then who's next in line according to the phase A, B, and C and the tiers within each phase? Who's next in line?
Well, the state has created a phase 1B, tier 1, and that would be people over 75, public health workers. It could even be law enforcement, emergency services workers, the other firefighters that are not doing necessarily healthcare. So the next group of people that we need to be vaccinated, those, again, that are at the highest risk. But soon, the state will want us to be vaccinating everybody at risk. So everybody over 65, people with pre-existing conditions, because we find the tiers aren't as clear as they need to be. If we have vaccine, we want to vaccinate everybody that we can.
Of course, right. Tell me about some of the logistics.
Well, originally, we focused the vaccines on hospitals, and hospitals received their own vaccine or we redistributed it to them. In the beginning, we found that less than half of the healthcare workers at hospitals actually wanted the vaccine. And that was a little bit of a surprise because we would have thought that a much higher percentage would have wanted them.
Right.
We also realized because this is a new vaccine under emergency use, after you receive the vaccine, you have to be somewhere where you're observed for 15 minutes.
Mm.
And you can have a group of people doing that, but we really had to account for that. Where do you put the people? Who can watch over them? And in fact, when we did our first drive-through clinics last weekend, that became a challenge in that where do you put those cars? We're used to cars coming in, you get tested, and you leave. Now we had to find a place to put them, assign people to then walk through the cars, make sure people were fine. And like any vaccine or anything, some people have a reaction to the shot. Some people are afraid of needles. So there's always the challenge of an emergency happening, but we're well prepared for that as well.
So those were some of your early logistics. So going forward, you've got those in mind now. So I was going to ask, what did the team learn from the first go around? Obviously, the wait, the 15-minute wait was one of them. What else did you learn that going forward you're going to be more prepared?
Well, with the first vaccine was the Pfizer. That's the one that has to be frozen. Then you thaw it out, mix it. And that was a logistic challenge, but one we could do. The Moderna one, which we have more of right now, can be kept just in a regular freezer. It can be refrigerated more days. So that reduces the stress of having to do something within a very short period of time. It still has time limited once you take it out of the refrigerator or the freezer, but it allows us more flexibility. The other part we found out when we did our drive-through clinics, even though we were very clear about who could register and who would receive it, everybody showed up. Family members, other people that met other phase criteria, and it was very hard to explain to people it's not your turn yet when they were right there in front of us. That was very much a challenge.
So you had to turn people away that were right in front of you.
We had to turn people away, and that's against everything we believe in public health. We always, if the people are there, you want to treat them, you want to give them what they need, and we're hoping that soon the state will change its priorities so we have a little more flexibility within the phases and tiers.
So you were talking about what you didn't anticipate was some of the medical staff. Not everybody wanted it in the beginning. So did you have some leftovers? Were you able to find people so that at least they didn't go to waste? How was that part handled?
Well, very little went to waste because at the end of the day, you have a few shots left. We want to make sure we find people, right? I heard of even drugstores announcing over the loudspeaker, if you're here now and you want the vaccine, come get it. Some people were hesitant to do that because they thought it was against the law, so to speak. But no, we don't ever want to waste vaccine. We always understand that and always have a little bit of extra or account for people that don't come or people that walk in. So I think more or less it seems to have worked out, except for the fact that people are always trying to get the vaccine that aren't in the right tier. And I think that's more our fault on messaging and education. And the healthcare system has made things very complicated. And we need to find a way to make the messaging clearer and a way to get everybody who wants to be vaccinated, vaccinated.
With the vaccines in the two manufacturers that you're currently using, they require the patient to return. How are you making sure that the patient returns?
Well, the state system, which is called PrepMod, actually, when you put your information in to register for your vaccine, it will notify you. You'll get a notification that it's time for your second dose. At least we hope that's what happens. What we're finding now is, again, if you heard President Biden is saying, let's get all the vaccine we have out. Don't save anything for the second shot, and we'll encourage the manufacturers to make even more. We expect some change either in the federal or the state guidance this week that may say don't put anything aside for the second dose. Give it all out now, and we'll guarantee later shipments. We're a little worried about that, but we'll follow the guidance.
I want to go through some commonly asked questions. And they may be very common and maybe silly questions, but I just want to go through some of these, if we can. How quickly is it estimated that the vaccine starts to protect the individual?
Yeah, everybody is different, but we would think 10 to 14 days. That's how long it would take for any vaccine. So you've heard of cases where people got the vaccine and the next week got sick with COVID. Absolutely. So we would say about 2 weeks. I assume the next question would be is, how effective is the vaccine after one shot and 2 weeks? Well, it's about 50% effective. 50 to 60% effective, as far as we can tell from the data.
So the 94-95 percentage is when they've had the two shots.
When they've had the two shots.
Got it. Okay.
But I want to remind people, the flu shot at best is only 60% effective. So even one shot of this is almost as good as the regular flu shot. So we shouldn't discount that one shot isn't good. One shot is great. Two shots is magnificent.
Better. Got it. Let me reintroduce our guest is Michael Osier. He is the Assistant Director for Riverside County Public Health and one of the key persons working on the coordination of COVID-19 vaccines in Riverside County. Where does one go to get the vaccine, and are appointments going to be needed? I see that Los Angeles, the Dodger Stadium is changing and it's going to be providing vaccines, and Disneyland and their grounds is going to be changing that for Anaheim. For our area, those that aren't medical employees, where are they going to get the vaccines? What's the logistics now that you're setting up in preparation for that?
Well, we have two ways we're looking at it. One is using our drive-through sites on the days that we don't have testing. We already do testing at big sites at the Indio Fairgrounds, the Paris Fairgrounds, like Elsinore Storm Stadium, and those kind of locations. So we likely might continue that, though the drive-through sites have been a challenge, as I said, because of the 15-minute wait and where do you put all the cars. And last week, we ended up blocking intersections at Lake Elsinore. So we're also looking at, we call them pods, points of distribution. Since schools are not in session, we are looking at school gymnasiums, high schools with big parking lots, where you actually would park and come into the site. We think that's a more controlled environment, and we could see more people that way. And we'll start advertising that at the end of this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, because we really need to get the vaccine out to the people that need it. Right now, we're only authorized for that phase 1A, which is the healthcare workers that we described, medical first responders and such. Mm-hmm. But we're hoping the state will soon expand that to the next tiers, which would include people over 75, people over 65, people with pre-existing conditions, because we need to reach those people as well.
Just your educated guess, when and where will the general public who are not in phase one, in your estimation, start getting vaccinated?
I can only guess now, but we're hoping in the next few weeks.
In the next few weeks?
Yes, we want to move this fast because we want to reach everybody by middle of summer. So we need to really start moving this ahead. You're going to quote me in the next few weeks, but let's say within the month, we need to get the vaccine out to people.
And is there a cost for the vaccine to anybody?
Nobody will be charged for the vaccine. We will ask for insurance information, but just like with testing, nobody will be individually charged. If you don't have insurance, you check the box of no insurance, and they have you sign an affidavit, but nobody individually will be charged for the vaccine.
Is it recommended for someone that's already had COVID-19 that they be vaccinated as well?
That's a great question. Absolutely. We recommend you don't get it during those first 10 days when you're symptomatic and where you still have the disease. But after that, if you don't have symptoms, then we would recommend you get it. Some people want to wait the 90 days until they're not positive anymore because some studies show that you still have immunity for 90 days after you've had it. Mm. But after those first 10 days of having COVID, you should be fine for the vaccine, assuming you don't have any other conditions that would preclude you from getting it.
Now, let me just ask about a certain population. Who are the individuals that should be cautious about getting vaccinated? Are there any that is a population that should be cautious?
Well, we know that Moderna is only for people 18 and over. The Pfizer is 16 and over. We recommend anyone who's pregnant talk to their physician first. And then there's all those questions. If you are immune compromised, if you have other serious illness, talk with your physician, your medical provider first to make sure it's okay. If you've ever had allergic reaction to any of the vaccines, we want to really exercise caution with that. Check with your medical provider because it may not be the vaccine per se, but maybe whatever we mix it in. Because where sometimes some vaccines you get the dead virus or a diluted virus, both the vaccines we're using, Pfizer and Moderna, do not use the virus. It's the messenger RNA, this gets really technical, which finds and then builds up your immune system, but without using a virus. So nobody can get sick from the vaccine, though you may have reactions to it.
Got it. Two different things. When the general public starts to get vaccinated, will they be able to go to their own provider, go to pharmacists, or will it still be this public line that we get into to get vaccinated?
We want every physician's office to have vaccine. We want clinics to have it. We want pharmacies to have it. We want to work with places like Costco and Ralph's and CVS. And I'm sure I forgot another drugstore, pharmacy. We want everyone who's a medical provider to have this because we need to reach in Riverside up to 2 million people, 2.5 million people. I forget how many children we have under 18, but to do that, we need everybody to have access to the vaccine. In fact, tomorrow we're going to start calling everyone who could qualify to be a distributor of the vaccine to get signed up with the state system so they can receive the vaccine. We think it's much better if people could go to their medical provider than sitting in line or going to a drive-through or to a walk-up clinic.
So this is what I want to ask you. What is your greatest takeaway that you really want the public to know about this whole scenario?
The vaccine is safe. Be patient because we have to wait our turn until the state or the federal government gives us that opportunity. And it is a safe vaccine, and we encourage everyone who qualifies to get it to get it because it's the only way we're going to stop the disease, Lillian.
Where can people go for more information? And I know you represent Riverside County, and I would assume your colleagues on San Bernardino County have something similar, but where do you recommend people go for more information?
Well, you can always go to our rivcoph.org/coronavirus site, rivcoph.org/coronavirus. Click on the vaccine, and we'll take you to a vaccine page that has all kinds of information and a phone number for the state answering service that will answer all their questions. We think that's the best way. That way, you can get all the information you need. It'll tell you where the clinics are. It'll tell you everything about the vaccine.
Are you seeing light at the end of the tunnel?
I'm seeing a faint glimmer of hope at the beginning of the tunnel. I'm hopeful. We're very hopeful that this is going to be the key. The vaccine's the key. Now, you'll still have to wear your mask, keep social distancing, and wash your hands. Stay home if you're sick, because it's a whole production, layers of protection that makes this work. I think this vaccine is the key to ending the pandemic.
Michael, thank you so much for your information and what you're out there doing to try and put a halt on this pandemic.
Thank you, Lillian. I hope we can talk in a few months and we can see the end of the tunnel.
I look forward to some good news in our next conversation. Michael Osier is the Assistant Director for Riverside County Public Health. You can find Riverside County Public Health online at rivcoph.org. rivcoph.org. After the break, a conversation with Ryan Hagan, reporter for the Southern California News Group, which includes The Sun. We'll be talking about restrictions on Southern California restaurants and how they're being followed, or not. I'm Lillian Vasquez, and you're listening to Inland Edition on KVCR. We'll be right back. You're listening to Inland Edition on KVCR. I'm Lillian Vasquez. When stay-at-home orders are in place, businesses referred to as essential are allowed to remain in operation as long as social distancing is observed and masks are worn. But for restaurants, the rules are different. To get the latest on restaurants and the restrictions placed upon them, we've invited Ryan Hagen on the show. Ryan reports for the Southern California News Group, which includes The Sun. Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Great to be on. Thank you.
You recently reported on restaurants that are operating in violation of state rules. Now, I want to try and discuss both sides, operating in violation and not following the rules in place and following the given restrictions and still trying to run a business. You reported that one resident in Upland continues to report the restaurants not following the guidelines. What did she share with you?
Yeah, she was extremely frustrated by what she called the COVID alley that she walks by every day, where, in her perspective, these are restaurants that people are eating both inside and outside, which, of course, are both in violation of the state mandates to protect people against coronavirus. And, she's just kind of imagining as she walks by these how many people are getting the disease and potentially, afterwards giving it to someone else who might die.
And how did you come in touch with her? Who is she reporting it to?
She's reporting it to the county. The county asks people to fill out a form online, and they also have a phone number to call. And so she's been reporting to both of those, she says, almost every day since early in the pandemic. She actually also was in touch with one of the columnists for our newspaper, David Allen, and he knew that I was working on a related story, so he passed along her phone number.
What was she trying to accomplish? So the businesses will stop operating in that manner? That's her goal?
Right. Earlier, she was just trying to get them to only operate outdoors when the thinking was that was the safest way to do it. And now she wants them to only provide food to go, which she thinks is, the safest way to do it as do state officials.
So Ryan, as a reporter, we try to get both sides. And we understand in some capacity why businesses want to stay open. They're trying to make a living. They're trying to stay afloat. They're trying to keep things going. On the other hand, we're in a pandemic and we're trying to push this down. So did you talk to others about this issue and maybe the other side?
Yeah, this is definitely an issue where the stakes are high on both sides. And I spoke to a restaurant owner in the city of Riverside who was saying, yes, I know that this is a dangerous time, but I need to make a living. My restaurant will go out of business if I'm not able to keep serving people outdoors. She has ended indoor dining at her location. She says, the state doesn't have a right to take my business away from me. So although it has unfortunate consequences, this is just what I have to do to, make a living.
Doesn't the state have a right to shut them down?
Legally, they do. I mean, that's been tried by courts, and I'm sure that there will be future court cases as this works its way higher up the court system. But as it's been interpreted so far, the state does have the legal right to do this. It's worth mentioning that the county of San Bernardino actually is challenging that ability and is suing the state to allow businesses in San Bernardino County to follow different guidelines. It's not 100% sure exactly what guidelines San Bernardino County would put in place instead of the state ones. But as it stands right now, the state does have that legal right.
You also spoke with, or at least in the article, you did quote or cite the San Bernardino County as they shared a response with you. They're in a tough situation, too, because who wants to be the bad guy and go tell them to shut down when they're trying to make a living? But the rules are the rules. What did you hear from the county?
Right. The county's position is that, their ultimate goal is to make things as safe as possible for residents in their county. And the way that they say is most effective at doing that is to focus on education rather than punitive measures. So they say in most cases they're able to go out to places that have had complaints filed against them, tell the business owner, you know, look, this is unsafe and also illegal. You need to stop. Then they leave, and they say that in most cases the business does then follow the restrictions after that. Obviously, there are some exceptions to that. The business owner that I talked to in Riverside, for example, said she was visited. The officials asked her, you know, are you having people eat indoors? She said, yes, I am. And again, she changed that afterwards. And that was the last she heard from them, and she's continued to operate there in violation since then.
Let me reintroduce my guest is Ryan Hagan. He's a reporter for the Southern California News Group, which includes The Sun. Now, you're only citing one restaurant that you spoke with, and I'm sure this one woman that in the alleyway that you're talking about, there were several. In doing this article, were there a lot more restaurants that are staying open and operating and violating this order?
Yeah, there were quite a few, and I don't have a comprehensive number. Mm-hmm. I was able to get from the San Bernardino and Riverside counties a list of businesses that they have contacted to inform them that they're violating the rules. In San Bernardino counties in particular, it's a spreadsheet with just hundreds of entries in it. Many of those, again, they say, are now following the rules. But I think most of your listeners, if they have been driving around, will see a lot of places that continue to operate indoor or outdoor dining. Reaching out to talk to them, many, I think, understandably said, you know, I don't want to put a target on my back by being interviewed.
Sure.
So, you know, goodbye. there are a lot out there.
Did you learn from the county that if they do go and tell the restaurant they need to close, and as you described, some of them probably are going to or have, and then they open up again, then the county would go out and say it again? Or do you know the ramifications? Because I can't imagine they're just going to be hard-nosed and do it right then, because we're all in such crisis. But rules are rules.
Right. There are mechanisms in place, and in a couple of cases, they have taken businesses to court to try mm-hmm. to force them to close. That's mostly been larger venues, you know, where potential super spreader events might be happening, and they've really kind of tried the honey rather than vinegar approach for the other restaurants.
And, of course, we're only talking about restaurants here. There are so many other businesses that are probably opened not following the rules, and you know, whether it's salons or spas or whatever kind of personal care, that are still probably operating. And in one instance, you can understand why, but in the other instance, you're like, no. So it really is a tough one. When you were done with the article, what did you walk away with? What was your thoughts, or where are you on this?
Yeah, well, of course, as a reporter, you know, I tried to, you know, kind of show both sides, but not have a personal take myself. But I think it's impossible to not see the, again, the stakes on both sides, the strong emotion and, you know, just what everyone stands to lose here. You know, it's I think a lot of people are saying, you know, if only people could follow certain restrictions, then we wouldn't have these huge number of cases and huge number of deaths. And then we could go back to a more normal way of life sooner. But, you know, from the perspective of a business owner, I certainly hear what they're saying, that, you know, they need to make a living.
How has this changed your world and your reporting? How has COVID-19 affected you?
Well, I haven't been to the office since March 13th. So that's one huge change to my daily routine. There have been a couple of cases where, you know, maybe a few times a month I have to go out to a story in person. But unlike the photographers for the paper who have to put their health at risk on a regular basis, I've mostly been able to shift to covering news by phone and by video. And it's very much changed my daily workload, and as well as, you know, knowing people in my personal life who have gotten the virus. So it's a huge shift in my life for sure.
My guest is Ryan Hagan. He's a reporter for the Southern California News Group, which includes the Sun. Oh, that shows how old I am when I say the San Bernardino Sun. The Sun. How has it changed how you're reporting? So before, you would have gone out on the story and interviewed people there with your notepad, taking notes, or however you take notes, as opposed to now doing it via phone or online?
Right. And, you know, I think, you know, you know very well, you get a lot more depth when you are talking to someone face-to-face and when you're able to see, you know, the location where something is happening, and you get a deeper appreciation for the story in that case. So, you know, it has made reporting more difficult, I think, and has changed things for the worse in a number of ways. I think, you know, having to make phone calls is low on the list of overall effects of this pandemic. But, you know, it does make for different interviewing techniques that I have to follow now, and makes it more difficult to find people affected by certain decisions when I can't just, you know, go out to the neighborhood or go out to the business and just, you know, talk to people. It has to be someone that I'm put in touch with by phone, or that chooses to participate in a video conference or a video meeting or something like that.
Right. So it really has changed your ability to maybe see boots on the ground, because we don't have that access. So it's just like you said, I agree that we kind of have to find somebody who knows somebody that we can make the phone call to, as opposed to going to something and meeting people there and asking them questions. Like, you could have gone to a restaurant that was, you know, eating outside, and you could have asked them, maybe some of the people there would probably have changed the story a little bit, and then you would have had their perspective on, you know, why they're choosing to be there.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I would have been able to decide in more detail, you know, how safe or unsafe the precautions that are in place appear to be, and, you know, who is there and how safe do they feel, and, you know, why are they choosing to do this? Without knowing, you know, people who are going out to eat, I can't just place cold calls and say, hello, sir, hello, ma'am, are you going out to eat tonight? So it makes for a different type of story.
Yeah, totally. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for the article. I appreciate it.
Thank you for shining a light on it.
Ryan Hagan reports for the Southern California News Group. They publish several regional newspapers, including The Sun, Inland Valley Daily News, Press Enterprise, and the Redlands Daily Facts. They're online at soquelnewsgroup.com. To hear this episode and past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/inlandedition. You can also listen to Inland Edition on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, or search for Inland Edition on your streaming service. Inland Edition is a production of KVCR News. The production team includes Rick Dulock, Sharina Wadd, and Tim Seidel with writing, production, and web support, and David Fleming with editing and final mixdown. Web and social media support comes from Sean Houlihan and Andrew Caravella. I'm your host, Lillian Vasquez. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.